The following is a class on the Srimad Bhagavatam. First Canto, Chapter Number 9, Text Number 22. Given by His Grace, Sriman Sankarshan Das Adhikari. Recorded on June 15th, 2012, in Melbourne, Australia.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Tathapi
Ekanta
Bhakteshu
Pashya
Bhupa
Anukampitam
Yat
Me
Asun
Syajata
Sakshya
Krishna
Darshanam
Agata
Tatapyekanta
bhakteshu
Pashyabhupanukampitam
Yanmesham
syajata
sakshat
Krishna darshanam
agata
Tatapyekanta
bhakteshu
Pashyabhupanukampitam
Yanmesham
syajata
sakshat
Krishna darshanam
agata
Tatapi
still
Ekanta
unflinching
Bhakteshu
unto the devotees
Pashya
see here
Bhupa
O King
Anukampitam
how sympathetic
Yat
for which
may
my
asun
life
chajataha
ending
sakshat
directly
Krishnaha
the personality of Godhead
darshanam
in my view
agata
has kindly come.
Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada.
Yet, despite his being equally kind to everyone, he has graciously come before me while I am ending my life, for I am his unflinching servitor.
Purport.
The Supreme Lord, the Absolute Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, although equal to everyone, is still more inclined to his unflinching devotee who is completely surrendered and knows no one else as his protector and master. Having unflinching faith in the Supreme Lord as one's protector, friend, and master is the natural condition of eternal life. A living entity is so made by the will of the Almighty that he is most happy when placing himself in a condition of absolute dependence. The opposite tendency is the cause of fall down. The living entity has this tendency of falling down by dint of misidentifying himself as fully independent to lord it over the material world. The root cause of all troubles is there in false egotism. One must draw towards the Lord in all circumstances. The appearance of Lord Krishna at the deathbed of Bhishmaji is due to his being an unflinching devotee of the Lord. Arjuna had some bodily relation with Krishna because the Lord happened to be his maternal cousin, but Bhishma had no such bodily relation. Therefore, the cause of attraction was due to the intimate relation of the soul. Yet, because the relation of the body is very pleasing and natural, the Lord is more pleased when he is addressed as the son of Maharaj Nanda, the son of Yashoda, the lover of Radharani. This affinity by bodily relation with the Lord is another feature of reciprocating loving service with the Lord. Bhishma Dev is conscious of this sweetness of transcendental humor, and therefore he likes to address the Lord as Vijaya Sakhe, Parita Sakhe, etc., exactly like Nanda Nandana or Yashoda Nandana. The best way to establish our relation in transcendental sweetness is to approach him through his recognized devotees. One should not try to establish the relation directly. There must be a via medium which is transparent and competent to lead us to the right path. Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Jata Balakamala Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupa Sagrajata Sagana Raghunatanvita Tam Sajiva Sadaita Lavaduta Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Deva Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitamsha. We're made by the Almighty. We're not self-made, or we're not simply evolved out of the apes. We are made, as described here by Prabhupada, made by the will of the Almighty in a certain way. You see? In other words, it was not some chance combination of material elements that brought us to our present position. This Darwin's theory has become very, very popular nowadays. It's gospel, accepted as gospel in the media. It's just automatically assumed that we evolved. Everyone assumes it. But actually, it's recent discoveries in the recent decades in molecular biology, the whole field of molecular biology. If you look at the data, you see, that's now available through the molecular biology field of study, and you run it through the statistical analysis from the mathematics field, then it becomes very clear that it's impossible. Darwin's theory is absolutely impossible. It can never happen. But in spite of the obvious impossibility of Darwin's theory, it's accepted as gospel. It's dogma. It's simply dogma. Darwin's dogma, is it? So we're not just coming out of some chance combination of material elements. We are made by the Almighty in a certain way. And what is that way? To be happy when we feel dependent on Krishna. That's our natural constitution. When you feel dependent on Krishna, that's when you become happy. By nature, you see. If you try to be happy differently, well, you're just swimming upstream, you know. You're going against the flow of your natural consciousness. When you try to be happy in a different way. So instead of trying to be happy in a way which is unnatural, which is not going to work, not in millions of lifetimes, even if you achieve the post of Brahmanji, you will still not be happy thinking you're the Lord. The only way to become happy is the feeling of being absolutely dependent on Krishna and nothing else. What else is dependable? Can we depend on the Australian government? Can we depend on Qantas Airlines? You see, what can you depend on? Your insurance company? What can you depend on in this world? There's nothing you can depend on. Absolutely nothing that you can absolutely depend on in all circumstances. There's only one thing you can depend on, and that is Krishna. So instead of trying to artificially think, by my plans, by my bank balance, by my position, by my potency, I can do this and that. Instead of trying to live artificially in a dream state, which is surely to be popped at any minute, just like a little child's bubble that he blows bubbles. It may make a very, very big, beautiful bubble, but it will be popped, you see, in due course. Or the other example is castles made of sea are washed. Castles made of sand are washed into the sea. You make a very, very nice castle, but it will be washed to the sea. It's like I used to work with our Back to Godhead magazine. They were headquartered at that time at our temple in San Diego, a neighborhood called Pacific Beach. And as the name indicates, this part of San Diego is right on the beach. And they had the Pacific Beach branch of the U.S. Postal Service. And they had a huge picture. I think it was about from this column to the other column, two crossing this three columns here. It was that wide and about as tall as that. And it was a huge picture of a sandcastle that they had built on the beach. You see, the picture of the sandcastle is there. If you go down to the beach, there's no sandcastle. So we've made this whole sandcastle civilization based on the conception that we are powerful, that we don't depend on God. We simply depend on science, the progress of science. But this civilization will be just like that sandcastle, be washed to the sea. All the big, big names, you see. All these big, big names, scientists. All the big, big, big leaders. All the big, big people of this material society. In due course of time, they'll be completely forgotten. You see. In Paris, there's a statue. And it says, it's of Napoleon. It says, Napoleon is France, and France is Napoleon. But where is Napoleon? France is still there, but where is Napoleon? Is he a rat circumambulating the Eiffel Tower? Where is he? Is he? So all these big, big names, they become completely lost. The big superstars of today, as soon as they leave their body, who knows where they are? Where is Stephen Jobs now? Where is John Lennon now, you see? Where are all these big names? Where are they now? What kind of body are they in? Who knows, you see? So instead of defying the Supreme, we should just admit, I'm dependent on God. I can't do anything. I can't even breathe unless He gives me the air to breathe. I can't beat my own heart. Only by the presence of the super soul in my heart is it getting energy to beat and keep my body alive, you see. We're totally dependent on God at every second. So they say, well, you're not supposed to be humble, you know, you're supposed to be proud. If you're humble, people take advantage of you. So you shouldn't humble yourself before God. You should think yourself very big and very strong, you see. But that's not a proper understanding. You have to think totally dependent on Krishna. Totally dependent on Krishna. The more you feel weak before God, completely dependent on His mercy to do anything, material or spiritual, that you become more and more powerful. You see, more and more powerful. The most powerful person is the one who feels himself the meekest, most humble person. That is the most powerful person. Even Christ states this in the Bible. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. So, Prabhupada, we can see the greatest spiritual master in the history of the universe. What position did he take for himself? He said, even though I've been designated Bhakti Vedanta, I have no Bhakti, I have no Vedanta. But my dear Krishna, I'm simply a puppet, you're the puppeteer, you simply pull my strings, make me dance, make me dance, make me dance as you like. You see, that is the position. To put ourselves humbly, simply as a servant of the Lord. And my dear Lord, you engage me in whatever way I can best serve you, that's all. You can take anything away you want to take away from me, that's all right. You can give me any duty, any responsibility, anything you engage in your service, that's all right. It's completely up to you, my Lord, what you want to do with me. I have complete faith and trust in you. You can take anything away from me and everything away from me. It doesn't matter. And just see the wonderful example of Bali Maharaj, you see. Bali Maharaj, he was so surrendered to Krishna that even the reward he got for being surrendered was to be pushed into hell. And he didn't think, well, Krishna, why are you doing this? I've surrendered unto you, and now you're pushing me into hell? What sort of Lord are you? He didn't think that way. He didn't feel that way. He just felt, oh, I'm so fortunate. The Lord's lotus foot is on my head. He didn't think, oh, I've lost my whole kingdom and now I'm being sent to the hellish regions. He didn't think that way. A devotee never sees any reverse condition. He sees everything as the mercy of Krishna. He never sees that he's the loser in any way. When he's completely dependent on Krishna, he never feels or sees that he's ever the loser in any way. He sees every single moment as his gain. You see? So this consciousness, this is pure consciousness, Krishna consciousness. It is the domain of the liberated souls, this consciousness. And we can have it too. We conditioned souls, struggling devotees, we can also have that consciousness, that pure bhakti consciousness. We simply have to study very carefully in Prabhupada's books, understand exactly what is that pure bhakti mood. We have to find devotees who can inspire us in that pure bhakti mood, and we have to try to develop it. Because that will liberate us, as confirmed by Jiva Goswami in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 1.2.187. One who engages his body, mind, and soul in the service of Krishna, body, mind, and words, I mean to say, in the service of Krishna, becomes a liberated soul even in all conditions of this material existence. So there's nothing to stop you, Prabhu. There's nothing to stop you, Mataji. You simply have to engage your body, your mind, and your words 24 hours a day in Krishna's service. Well, maybe I'm doing 10% now. How do I increase? Maybe I'm 10% engaged now and I got 90% nonsense going on in my consciousness. How do I advance? Well, the first step is you have to desire to advance. I'm not happy just being 10% Krishna conscious. That means I'm miserable, 90% miserable. 10% is not good enough. Well, if you can't make the quantum leap to 100%, then go to 11%. You see? How can I increase my consciousness even a little bit? And if I get to 11%, then go for 12%. In this way, you see. Not that, well, if I can't go 100%, it's useless. No. It's a lifelong process to become a pure devotee, you see. It's like, wow, I enrolled in the university and I've been studying for 24 hours. Why didn't I get a degree yet? I'm dropping out. I mean, is that sanity or is that insanity? You enrolled in the university, you expect to have a degree. After I worked so hard for 24 hours, they didn't give me my PhD yet. I mean, come on. So we have, how much greater of an accomplishment is to develop pure love in Krishna? You see? It can take many, many thousands and millions of lifetimes to achieve pure love in Krishna. But by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya and the mercy of His Divine Grace, Om Vishnu Pad Paramahamsa Parivajakacharja Astatarasadashi Srimadesi Bhaktivedantati Dandi Goswami Maharaj Prabhupada. In even one lifetime, we can achieve pure bhakti. So we have to understand what it means. We have to see where we're at. We have to honestly look into our own hearts and see what is our defect. What am I doing wrong? In what way am I proud? In what way am I lazy? In what way am I envious? We have to be brave enough to look and see all that dirt in our hearts. And then be willing to take stringent action to eradicate it. You see? We have to be very, very intolerant of our own defects. And very tolerant of the defects of others, Prabhupada said. He said, strict with yourself and lenient with others. Our tendency is to be strict with others and lenient with ourselves. You see, it's called lording it over. Just like I remember, I was at one Ratha Yatra festival years ago when I was Sankarshan Das Brahmachari. I spent 14 glorious years in the Brahmachari ashram. Anyway, I was at the Ratha Yatra festival, and one Brahmachari, I had a simply wonderful, getting ready to pop that wonderful sweet in my mouth. And some Brahmachari came up and said, "Stop! That's a dhoti whitener." You know, brahmacharis are not allowed to eat any sweets, you know. You eat a sweet, Prabhu, you're going to fall down and get married. Well, I ate that sweet. And I remained brahmachari for many, many years after that. And he got married right away. That devotee got married right away. So, you know, he was being so strict with me, so heavy with me, just for eating one sweet at a Ratha Yatra festival. I mean, Prabhupada said a sweet every now and then. Prabhupada authorized us to eat sweets, okay? He said a sweet every now and then. It's not that every minute you pop a sweet in your mouth, you know. But, you know, a sweet, Prabhupada authorized a sweet every now and then. He said, there's a letter, he says, a sweet every now and then. So someone will calculate, how long is every now and then? That's up to you, you know. You have to judge your own Krishna consciousness. What's working for you? But the point was, he was being so heavy with me, but then he himself, you know, was defective. He was a hypocrite, actually. It was hypocrisy, the way he was dealing with me. So that, we shouldn't be like that. Other devotees, you know, we should be very tolerant of other devotees, but very, very strict with ourselves. That sobriety is a very, very important quality. I remember I was trained up with that famous sannyasi, that Vishnu Janaswami. At the time I was a young countercultural songwriter, singer-songwriter, associating with the devotees. And there was one evening program, and Vishnujana Swami was doing a Namahat program at someone's house. And I just went to the kitchen to get a drink of water, and he happened to be there too, just him and me all alone. The program was going in the other room, but he and I are by ourselves together in the kitchen for a few moments. And he says to me, he says, "You have to become sober." And that really made it, it really was amazing. Because in those days, in the counterculture days, we were thinking, you know, get intoxicated forever, you know. That was the philosophy. Get intoxicated and stay intoxicated. You see? But he said, you have to become sober. And he was coming from such a divinely intoxicated platform. So all of a sudden, sobriety took on a new meaning, you see. But that's something the straight people do. They want to be sober, you know. The non-hip people. But now, all of a sudden, sobriety became the highest level of intoxication. I was amazed by that instruction. You have to become sober. But actually, it's a fact. The more you become very, very sober about becoming a pure devotee of Krishna, the more you become very, very sober at developing first-class loving relationships with every Vaishnava, the more you become sober about always thinking about the welfare of all living entities, just like Bhaktivinoda Thakur prayed, when will I forget my own comforts and just and set out to save the world with no other consideration, you see. That consciousness is the sweetest nectar, is the ultimate nectar. And we can have it, we can taste it, we can live in it, we can relish it, we can savor it, we can digest it, ingest it. We simply have to have that desire. I want to become the pure devotee of Krishna. I want to be totally dedicated to giving Krishna to others and give up all forms of selfishness, even the most subtle selfishness. I must give it all up and become completely 100% devotee of Krishna, pure devotee of Krishna. And then Prabhupada talks about the opposite tendency. This is very nice here. There's two tendencies, you see. There's the tendency to make yourself dependent on God and the tendency to lord it over the material world, independent. So you can be in a mood of being dependent or in the mood of being independent, you see. The mood of being dependent is the mood of becoming a liberated soul, of being a liberated soul. And the mood of independence, that is that's the lording and over mood. That is what forces us to enter in material existence and remain entangled here, birth after birth after birth. Prabhupada summarizes that mood of independence, that mood of lording and over mood, the term false egotism. It's interesting because before I came to the moon, we used to hear that, you know, you got to give up your ego. This was the common talk among the new way, the spiritualists of the 60s. You got to give up. And still, it's going on. You got to give up your ego. But Prabhupada introduced a new concept. Not the ego is given up, but the false ego. You see, so ego means identity. So it's true egotism is fine. Bona fide, true egotism. We have ego, we have identity. And there's nothing wrong with that. That identity is given by Gauranga. Jivara Savarupa Hai Krishna Nitya Das. The ego of the living entity is he's the eternal servant of Krishna. That is his actual ego, you see. So to assert that I'm the eternal servant of Krishna, that is called true egotism. And that egotism is very good. That egotism we must have. I'm the eternal servant of Krishna. That's why we put tilak on our forehead, kanti mala. We like to wear devotional clothing because we are asserting our ego, our spiritual ego, our spiritual identity as servants of Krishna. But the false ego, I'm the Lord, I am great, I'm the center, you see. That we have to give up. the root cause of all troubles. Any difficulty you have, I don't care what it is, every single difficulty you have is all traced back to false ego. So if you're stressed over something and think, well, this is a false ego problem I'm having right now. Any form of distress you ever have, simply look and say, oh, this is a false ego problem. And you say, how is this possible? I didn't have enough money to pay my rent. How is that a false ego problem? But it actually, everything stems from the false ego. We have to learn how to see that all anxiety is simply due to the false ego. This is an interesting phrase. The next sentence, Prabhupada says, one must draw towards the Lord in all circumstances. What does it mean to draw towards the Lord? It means you're like that. You're coming closer to the Lord. You're moving towards the Lord. You see, always moving towards the Lord. You can draw towards the Lord, or you can draw away from the Lord, you see. It's like we say a drawer. You open it, you close the drawer, you see. So we have to always be, the drawer is moved this way and that way, you see. So we're moving either towards the Lord or away from the Lord at every minute. Which way are you moving, you see? That we have to see. Which way am I moving now? At this moment, by my thoughts, by my words and my deeds, am I drawing towards the Lord or am I going away from the Lord? We have to be very introspective. We have to judge and see. Is this pulling me towards Krishna or away from Krishna? You see? And then the second paragraph, Prabhupada is talking about this wonderful, wonderful mood of Bhishma and the devotees and of Krishna. That the Lord is very, very pleased when we approach Him through the medium of His devotees. Krishna actually is not so keen on having us approach Him directly. He likes very much these names, Vijaya Sakhi, Partha Sakhi, Nandanandana, Jashoda Nandana, Radha Raman, Nandanandana, like this. These names are very dear to the Lord because these devotees, these intimate devotees are very, very dear to the Lord. Actually, the Lord says, I know no one but my pure devotees. They are in my heart, I am in their heart. So, if you want to actually approach Krishna, you have to go through the medium of the devotees. This is the description here. Prabhupada concludes his purport. He says, one should not try to establish the relation directly. There must be a via medium which is transparent and competent to lead us to the right path. That is the spiritual master. Someone may say, but no, I just want to approach Krishna directly. I mean, I can read the Bhagavad Gita. What do you mean? I can study the Bhagavad Gita and do what Krishna says in the Gita. He says, offer your food to me. I can just read the Gita and I can do that. I see, why do I need to go through a medium? Krishna says right here, well, my dear sir, why don't you read the whole Bhagavad Gita instead of just taking one verse out of context? I see. It's very easy to take something out of context to manipulate it to what you want. But take the whole thing. Take Bhagavad Gita in toto. What does Krishna say? You see. Tadvidi pranipatena pariprasnena sevaya upadengshati te jnanam jnanenastatpadarshinaha. And if you want to learn the truth, you see, then you have to approach to the spiritual master. How do you approach him? Pranipatena, you have to bow down at his feet. That means you're surrendering to him. If you bow down at someone's feet, that means you're surrendering to him. Pranipatena. In the next item, pariprasnena. You inquire. It's not blind following. But you have to inquire. Whatever doubts you may have or confusions, you should bring that out so you get a clear understanding. Your intelligence should be completely satisfied by inquiry. And the next item, sevaya, devotional service. Why? Can I just take the knowledge and go? No, you have to serve also. Because this is not theoretical knowledge, this is realized knowledge, and this knowledge is realized yeyamang. This knowledge is realized in proportion to one's degree of surrender. So you have to take up a mood of service to the spiritual master. You have to do that. If you don't serve the spiritual master, then you won't realize the knowledge. That's there. And then Prabhupada or Krishna says, then these great souls reveal the highest truth to you because they have seen the truth. Tattvadarshi. They are seeing the truth at every minute. And by their blessings, by their potency, they will inject you with transcendental knowledge, you see, through the ear holes. So this had to approach to the spiritual master is very, very important. Krishna directly states in the Adi Purana, Ye me bhakta jana parata na me bhaktas tate janaha mad bhaktanam chiye bhaktas te me bhakta tamamata. He says, the one who is my devotee, na me bhaktas. You don't have to be a Sanskrit expert to figure that one out. Na me bhaktas. Not my devotee. You see, the one who is my devotee, he's not my devotee. But the one who is a devotee of my devotee, he is my devotee. You see, so you want to be a devotee of Krishna? Great. So then see what Krishna says and how to become his devotee. You have to find one of his devotees and become the devotee of the devotee, and then you become the devotee. That's Krishna's teachings. So, well, Krishna, I don't like it that way. I want to do it my way. I just want to be your devotee. Sorry. You have to surrender. You can't come in with your own agenda and try to rewrite the scriptures like the Mayavadis do. You can't rewrite the scripture to suit you. You see? You have to take what Krishna actually says. Otherwise, you're a cheater, you're a rascal, you're a Naradama. Namang duskritina mudha mayaya paritayana asaram bhava mashrita. You're a demon. Sorry to say, you're a demon. You want to rewrite the scripture your own view. You're simply demon rakshasa. Just like that Vivekananda, he said, it's better to play football than read the Bhagavad Gita. What kind of nonsense is that? It's better that he plays football than comments on the Bhagavad Gita. That we can say. So we have to hear from a bona fide spiritual master. You hear from a rascal, you remain a rascal. You have to hear from a liberated soul. You want to be a liberated soul, you have to hear from a liberated soul. Otherwise, how you become liberated? His words will not liberate you. But if you hear from a liberated soul, those words have shakti. They have the power to cut through the hridaya granthi, the hard knot in the heart, which is entangling you birth after birth after birth in this material existence. You simply have to find the right place to hear and plug in. You just got to get online. Find the right place to connect. Get online by hearing from Prabhupada and those who are purely preaching the teachings of Prabhupada. You see, if you will connect in that way, you'll go on hearing, 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 hearing. By that hearing process, you'll develop love of Krishna. You'll become the pure devotee. We were studying wonderful seminar we had last night on the amazing teachings and pastimes of Sri Narad Muni. He did two things to become a liberated soul. He took prasadam, the remnants of the Bhaktivedantas. One time he took permission, he took the remnants of the prasad of the Bhaktivedantas, just one time. And he became purified of all sin by just that one prasad. And then he went for two seasons. He served them and he heard from them, you see. And by this association with the great sages, hearing, 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 then the nature of the, it's described in the Bhagavatam, the, he describes it, the nature of the transcendentalist became attractive to him. So that's when you realize you're really going somewhere, when the nature of the transcendentalist becomes attractive to you. See, the material world, we're attractive. Well, you know, Steve Jobs, that's pretty attractive. You know, make a lot of money, become famous, do something really cool, to invent something. See, we're, or maybe some pop singer or some athlete. We're, you know, in the material world, we're attracted to the different people like this, you see. That nature is attractive to us. But being attracted to that nature keeps us entangled in karma chakra. But one is actually attracted to the nature of great transcendentalists, their qualities, their characteristics, their activities, their speech, their manner of action, their pastimes, when these become very, very attractive to the aspirant devotee, I see, more so than anything of this material existence, then he's making solid progress, you see. Just like Narada Muni made that practice. And then by providential arrangement, his mother was bitten by the snake. Instead of becoming disturbed, he took it as a blessing. And he headed north, which means detachment. So we have to have this great vision of the sage Narada Muni to see everything as the blessing of Krishna. The good, the bad, the beautiful, the ugly, whatever may come, try to see everything as the blessings of Krishna. And then you'll never become unhappy, you'll never become disturbed, you'll never become bewildered in any time, place, or situation. So this process of Krishna consciousness will indeed liberate you if you fully absorb yourself in it without any hesitation, without any reservation, without any motives, and without any interruption. If you absorb yourself in this process very quickly, you will become solidly situated in pure Krishna consciousness. So I can ask now if there's any questions.
Prabhu, when early in your class you mentioned the Bali Maharaj Sohel, can you explain more?
Explain more about Bali Maharaj? Well, we know this, the pastime is quite familiar to everyone, that he was the demoniac king. He was ruling the universe. And the Lord appeared as Vamadev, disguising himself as a dwarf Brahmin, coming to beg. And he begged the three steps of land. And he was warned by his guru Maharaj, Shukracharya, don't do this, it's the Supreme Lord Vishnu, he's coming to take everything away. And actually he became glorious by rejecting his guru Maharaj. This is bogus. He's always said to worship Vishnu, now he's saying don't worship Vishnu? This is not bona fide, he rejected him. So he rejected a bogus guru and he surrendered himself to Krishna. And in spite of that surrender, he was pushed down to the nether regions, but the Lord appeared there along with him as his doorkeeper. So actually he wasn't really in hell. I mean, if you go to hell and Krishna's there with you personally, it's not hell, is it? He took it as a great blessing, and it turned out to be the greatest blessing, that Lord Vamanadeva came as his doorkeeper. So for a devotee, there's never any reverse condition, even what appears to be the most reverse condition. Just like Prabhupada himself, he had some, there was a point in our ISKCON history around the year 1970 where there was some contamination coming from the Gaudiya Math. They'd influenced some of the devotees that, why are you calling him Prabhupada? That name was only for Bhakti Siddhanta. They were cast putting doubts in the devotees' minds about Srila Prabhupada. And this was, Prabhupada saw the signs of it coming up here, coming up there. He could see the symptoms of this contamination manifesting in different ways in ISKCON. That's when he formed the GBC body, actually. He called the leaders, leading devotees to Los Angeles and formed the GBC body. And he was very, very disturbed. It was very, very disturbing for Prabhupada. He saw his movement as being polluted. His position, the position of the founder Acharya, was being minimized. And he was so disturbed, he told Tamal Krishna Maharaj, he called him from Europe. He was, Tamal Krishna Das Adhikari, I think he was at the time. He said, "Get me out of here." He was so disturbed. "Get me out of here." He said, "Where do you want to go, Prabhupada? How about Florida?" He said, "No, it's not far enough." So Prabhupada actually went to India. He actually prayed to Rukmini Dwarkadish, "Why are you driving me away?" Prabhupada could not understand what was going on, what Krishna was doing. Why are you driving me away? So he went to Japan, and then he went to India and started preaching there, and with such amazing success. The Bombay came up, Vrindavan, Mayapur, all these projects came up. So then Prabhupada realized this was Krishna's arrangement, the so-called reverse condition. And then Prabhupada came back. I was there when he came back then in 71. He came back to the Krishna had resolved the issue. Prabhupada's position was firmly established in everyone's hearts as the founder Acharya, as the supreme authority. And the contamination was the poison, the antidote. Prabhupada's mercy was the antidote for the poison that had infected the society. And even though it appeared to be the most reversed thing to Prabhupada at the time, he took it and he did not understand what Krishna was doing, but he accepted it, and our movement became incredibly successful in India, practically overnight. So these reverses sometimes happen to each and every one of us. We just have to see, what plan does Krishna have? Krishna is not unmerciful. He's not ever unmerciful to his devotees. Some plan of the Lord must be going on here, you see. So in this way, we have to have that faith in Krishna, just as Bali Maharaj had complete faith. He's being pushed into the nether regions. Any other questions? Okay. How can we develop the strength to confront the impurities of the heart? That strength comes by association. United we stand, and when divided we fall. If you go away from the association of the devotees, and you try to practice on your own, it'll be very, very difficult. One stick can easily be broken. A bundle, very difficult to break a bundle of sticks. So the way you develop strength is by always remaining tightly absorbed in the association of devotees. And if you're not, because of your job, because of your family situation, then if you remember the instructions of Prabhupada, if you'll hear Prabhupada's lectures as much as possible, you read Prabhupada's books as much as possible, you hear senior devotees giving class, or any devotees who are preaching according to Prabhupada's teachings, you hear the classes as much as possible, hear kirtan, chant as much as possible. In this way, when you are away from the devotees, and your job or with family who are not devotees, etc., because you deeply absorbed the Krishna Katha, when you have the opportunity to do so, that will stay with you. It's just like when we charge our mobile phones, and then we carry them all day without any connection to the electricity, but yet they keep working. So you have to charge yourself up. You have to have a good sadhana, a good japa, a good reading, good hearing, and that will charge you. Even if you're out in a job or with family who are not devotees, if you charge yourself well, then the mobile phone of your consciousness will continue to work. You see, because you fully charge your battery. So that's why every day 16 rounds. You see, that, and you chant good quality rounds every day, you're going to have strength. Spiritual strength that'll carry you through anything, even the worst scenarios. If you've chanted good rounds, you'll be able to handle it with no problem. And good japa is very important. Take shelter of the holy name at least 16 rounds every day. Any other questions? Yes?
My question is that you mentioned about that we should be strict with ourselves and lenient with others. But if we become too strict with ourselves, also sometimes it becomes detrimental towards the spiritual life. So how to balance it?
So the question, she's saying that if we become too strict with ourselves, it's not good for our Krishna consciousness. That's true. So what's the proper balance? How strict should you be with yourself? The point, you should deal with yourself in such a way that you always stay enlivened in Krishna consciousness. If you're punishing yourself so much, you know, that you become morose, then obviously you're doing it wrong. You should always stay enlivened, and you should always be blissed out 24 hours a day. So, but you know, the thing is, we make so many mistakes, we're conditioned souls. So every time you make a mistake, you go beat your head against the wall, you know, it's obviously not the right thing. You have to think, well, but you have to say, okay, I made a mistake, let me learn from this. I mean, sometimes devotees be very morose, probably very disturbed. He said, he told one devotee in Dallas, don't be morose, don't be morose, don't be morose. This devotee was so morose, he was lamenting his, you know, his fallen condition or whatever he was thinking, I don't know. But Prabhupada told him like that, don't be morose. So the point is you need to monitor your own consciousness, regulate your own consciousness in such a way that you're always blissful. Always blissful, you see. You wake up in bliss. And whatever mistakes you take, you soberly understand, yes, I made a mistake, but this is great now. You see everything in a positive way. You should always have a positive. Even if you're making a mistake, you're doing something wrong, you shouldn't have a negative attitude about it. You take everything in a positive way. Oh, wow, here I've learned a valuable lesson. This is great. You see, take everything as a positive way. That's the key. Always be upbeat in your Krishna consciousness. Okay, well, this is a good lesson. Now, let me remember this, you see. If you always keep yourself in a positive, optimistic consciousness, then you're doing the right thing. You should always be smiling. You know, if not, you may be sober look on your face, but then your heart should always be smiling, you see. Should always be smiling. Always feeling so happy. How fortunate I am that Prabhupada has come. How fortunate I am these devotees have saved me. And actually, Prabhupada mentioned it's very good to think about how much you were suffering before you came to Krishna consciousness. Sometimes we think, oh, I'm so miserable here in the ashram, you know, there's this problem and that problem. And you know, sometimes we may think that way. We should realize and remember how miserable it was before we came to Krishna consciousness. How horrible it was to be completely caught up in serving our senses. Do you remember how horrible it was when you were simply caught up in serving your senses? Do you remember them? So, just that memory is enough. Wow, thank God I'm here in Krishna consciousness. You see? In this way, one has to count your blessings. How fortunate I am, you see? How fortunate. Whatever difficulties we may see here in the society of devotees, we should tolerate. Actually, Prabhupada, there is no difficulty. But because we're conditioned, we are thinking, oh, this is a difficulty. But actually, there's no difficulty. But even if we see difficulty, still we should never think of leaving, you see. We should remain here. This is my home now. After millions of births, now I've found my shelter, the lotus feet of Krishna, lotus feet of Guru, you see. I found my shelter. So let me always remain here, you see. We have to learn how to become peaceful and happy in Krishna consciousness. Sometimes things are disturbing. The externals are disturbing sometimes. Just like yesterday, I was in the summertime. 2 days ago, I was in the warm summer in Malaysia. You know, you get on the airplane, it's summertime. Wow, it's great summer, great. You get on the plane, it's winter, you know. It's psychologically shocking, you know. Psychologically, it can make you feel depressed. I was enjoying the summer. It was great, you know, the nice sunshine and warm, nice warmth. And then all of a sudden, you know, the cold wind, and, you know, it's just like you can get depressed, you know. As I tell myself, you know, don't let it get to you, because it's just the you know, sukha dukkha. Because our happiness, our real happiness, is Krishna consciousness, you see, not the externals. Our problem is we base our happiness on externals. That's the problem. We're so stupid that we keep trying to base our happiness on the externals. You see, that's why we have difficulties. We keep trying to base our happiness on the external things, the material nature. But the fact is that no material arrangement, I don't care what it is, even if you get the position of Brahma, even if we make you Brahmaji, the Lord of the whole material world, you will still not be happy. You see? You know, give you all the best material facilities you could possibly have, you will still not be happy. You see? It's only one thing that can make you happy, and that is to get back in the water of Krishna consciousness. Radharani is so nicely stated. Mana mora vamadina jalavina yenamina. She says, if for one moment I do not think of Krishna, then my mind dials immediately, just like a fish out of water. So actually our only problem is we forget Krishna. It's the only, as soon as we forget Krishna, immediately we're back in the material ocean again. Birth, death, old age, and disease. A rotting, aging body, you see. Miserable situation. So, you say, well, should I be on myself for not being in the water of Krishna consciousness? You should be hard enough on yourself to get yourself back, motivated to get back into the water. That's all. You don't need any harder than that. I mean, how much force should you put on the fish to get him back in the water? You don't have to be unnecessary. You don't need to take the fish and like, wham, you know, and throw him back in the water. See, we're a fish out of the water, and we have to pick ourselves up by our own intelligence. So how hard should you throw yourself back into the water? You don't need to slam yourself back into the water. Just, you can gently toss yourself back into the water, you see. But my dear so-and-so das or so-and-so dasi, you see, here you are suffering in this material world, trying to be independent of Krishna. Try to take advantage of this mercy and just throw yourself back into the water right now, you see. And then what does Radharani say after that? You see, mana mora vamadina jalayena jana jalavina yena mina Krishna vina chane mara Krishna chane mariyaya mana Let's see, Madhura Hashavadane Mana Netarasayane Krishna Trishad Viguna Vadaya. You see, Radharani is so nicely writing these. She's so nicely spoken the shloka. You see, but when my mind and eyes see the sweetly Krishna's sweetly smiling face, I become so enlivened that my thirst for Krishna tvasha, immediately doubles. You see? So that's what you need. You see, that's all we really need is Krishna trishna, thirst for Krishna. You see, right now we're thirsty for so many other things. Give me some food. Give me some sex. Give me some prestige. You see, give me some this and that. That's the problem. We're thirsty for so many other things. But just try to develop that Krishna Trishna, that thirst for Krishna, you see. Because when you develop that thirst for Krishna, all the other thirsts will go away. That thirst for Krishna is so important thing, that greed for Krishna is so important, you see. Rupa Goswami confirms, he says, Krishna Bhakti Rasa Bhavita Mati Kriyatam Yadi Kuto Palabhyate Tattala Yang Api Mugyame Kalam Janma Koti Sukhitarana Labhyate. He says, pure devotional service and Krishna consciousness cannot be had even by executing pious activities in hundreds and millions of lives. It can be achieved only by paying one price, tatpalayam, intense greed to obtain it. And then Rupa Goswami advises, if it is available somewhere, one must purchase it without delay. So, how hard should we be on ourselves? Just get greedy, that's all you have to be. You don't have to be so hard on yourself. Take your natural greed for lust, your greed for to manifest anger, all of these things. You see, lust, greed, anger, madness, illusion, envy, all these tendencies we have, these greedy tendencies, just take them and Krishnaize them, that's all. You know, don't be hard on yourself. Just Krishnaize all of your material tendencies. Whatever tendency you have, lusty tendency, angry tendency, greedy tendency, lazy, mad, illusioned, envious tendencies. Take all your tendencies and just say, okay, now let me Krishnaize them. Krishnaize all of these tendencies. And by that Krishnaizing of all the material tendencies, transforming them all into greed for Krishna bhakti, then you will purchase Krishna. Krishna will become your personal property. So any other questions? How to increase, develop love for Krishna? Yeah. Well, there's two different questions. One is how to develop love for Krishna, how to increase it. It's interesting, there's two questions here. What is the relationship between increasing and developing love for Krishna? Actually, we already have love for Krishna. It is our very nature to love Krishna. Now that love for Krishna is pervertedly manifest in the form of Krishna's material energy. Prabhupada gives this example. If the house is burning down, first thing you think about saving yourself, not others. That's a natural tendency. How can I get saved? The first tendency. Why? But actually, that tendency is there because I know that I'm the spirit soul. I'm trying to remember exactly how Prabhupada described it, but it ultimately comes back to actually loving Krishna indirectly. Prabhupada describes it in that way. It actually comes back to loving Krishna. You're thinking of saving yourself, but then the Lord is actually there in your heart. Prabhupada described, I don't remember the details of how Prabhupada explained it, but he so nicely explained that even saving yourself ultimately is a manifestation of course it's indirect, but it's a manifestation of loving Krishna. So we have love for Krishna, but it's expressed pervertedly right now, that's all. The love is already there, it's coming out in a perverted way. So we just have to take that. It's like we love to look at something beautiful, for example. So we have to take that tendency to want to look at something beautiful and look at the beautiful form of the deities. We want to enjoy some pleasing sound, some, you know, enlivening music. So we should take that and hear the wonderful kirtan. So the tendency we have to love something of this world is actually a perverted manifestation of our original love for Krishna. So you don't deny it. It's like somebody said, what about affection for family members? Is that maya? Should you deny it? I said, no, don't deny it. Use that affection for your family members by making them Krishna conscious. So whatever your loving tendency you have now, don't just deny it, but reconnect it with Krishna. You see? Take it and reconnect it back with Krishna, and then it becomes pure. You don't have to deny it. The Mayavadis, you want to deny it. They say, no love. Love is false. Mature word is false. Identity is false. Relationships are false. It's all false, 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 false. The only reality is the spiritual truth. Param satya jagan matya. Spiritual reality is truth. Everything else is false. That's the Mayavadi philosophy. But that's not our philosophy. How this material manifestation, which is an emanation from the Supreme Absolute Truth, can be false. If the source is real, how the manifestation from that source can be false? It's real. So this material nature is real. And that love that we have is real, but it's simply covered. So we have to take our loving tendency we have now and reconnect it with Krishna. Prabhupada said, if you love your countrymen, make them Krishna conscious. You see. So take your loving tendency you have now and make it perfect. If you feel love for a person, then try to see that that person is Krishna conscious. If you love yourself, try to see that you're Krishna conscious. You see. In this way, take the love you have now, which is imperfect, and make it perfect by Krishnizing it. You understand? Okay, we got time maybe for one more question. Yes?
Could I write that down? You might be out of hearing.
I can read it.
Right. I was told that by just chanting the Maha Mantra, you can come to a Krishna or become self-realized.
Okay.
And reach Goloka.
Okay.
And realize that by chanting the Maha Mantra,
yeah,
you become more aware, plus your elevated consciousness. Therefore, it will be natural for you to come to the temple, mix with the devotees, and eat prasada, which is delicious. And do you have to become a devotee in order to attain Goloka?
Okay. Does one have to become a devotee to attain Goloka? Well, actually, you're already a devotee. Every living entity, as confirmed by Lord Chaitanya, is a devotee of Krishna. They have just forgotten. So not that you really have to become a devotee, you just have to stop being a non-devotee. And the more you chant Hare Krishna, your non-devotional activities will just fade away into the ether. You see? You're already there. It's just you have some gook covering you up. You're covered with some mud. You see? The chanting washes off all the dirt. And the more you chant, your natural devotee nature will just automatically manifest. You don't have to try to be a devotee. Just keep chanting and your devotional identity will fully manifest. Actually, this is the easiest process. You don't have to take on some identity that's artificial to you. No. Just come and chant and take prasadam. You keep chanting and taking prasadam. Keep chanting and taking prasadam. Lord Chaitanya's movement, you see, is simply feasting, chanting, and dancing. Feasting and dancing. Chanting. Keep doing this feasting and chanting and dancing, and then in due course of time, everything will automatically come. You don't have to worry about anything. Just keep chanting and dancing Hare Krishna and everything will come automatically. Okay? You'll attain Golok. And what will you do there? You'll chant, dance, and feast. So chant, dance, and feast your way back to Golok. Rules and regulations, they will come automatically. You don't have to worry so much. In the beginning, don't worry about rules and regulations. Just chant, dance, and feast. And regulations will come automatically when you want them. When you're ready, say, wow, this is so ecstatic. How can I get deeper into the nectar? Well, if you follow this rule, you know, you throw away your cigarettes, you get more bliss. You stop going with your girlfriend, messing around with your girlfriend, you know, you'll have even more bliss, you see. So those things just happen automatically. But the thing is, get into the chanting and dancing. Chanting, feasting, and dancing. Get into it. Really get into it. And naturally, the devotee that you are will manifest. You're a pure devotee already. You just forgot. That's all. You're a pure devotee of Krishna. You're an eternal inhabitant of Goloka Vrindavan. You just simply forgot it. Now you have to just come back to remember who you really are. That's all. And the more you chant, all the misidentifications will naturally fade away and you'll realize who you are. Okay, our time is up. Unless there's one quick question left. I don't see any, so that we'll stop here. And we thank you very much for being a part of this movement. Now please dive deeper and deeper into this process and achieve pure prema bhakti as soon as possible. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Jai.